It's a trap.
Hello and welcome to episode number 185 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan, and I'm joined by my co-host, John McDermott.
What's up, everybody?
And unfortunately, Carson wasn't able to record this week, but in his stead, we brought on a very special guest, the exuberant, the excitable, and sometimes egomaniacal, Mr. Paul Olson.
Oh, that was quite the introduction, Tim, but I am excited, ecstatic, and honored to be here. Thank
awesome.
You.
So today we're actually going to focus in on Separatist Swarm, which Paul has gotten a lot of experience flying very recently, so he's our resident Minnesota expert on that topic.
Good, no pressure.
So we're going to have a great conversation today. Definitely looking forward to Worlds here now, which is in just a few weeks. Getting our final little bit of prep here, so you'll probably expect a lot of Worlds conversation for these next two episodes. If you're not super into Worlds, you know, bear with us. A lot of this stuff is going to be relevant to, you know, your local playgroups too. So hopefully you can get some useful information here. Either way, though, let's get into it. All right, so before we start talking about Separatist Swarms, I want to go over your accolades, Paul, because you are a pretty well-accomplished X-Wing player. You're someone I respect a lot in the community.
Well, thank you.
You've had some great performances. Actually, one of the first times I saw you back at Gen Con, you made top 16 back in Gen Con 2017. So that was a good time.
Yes.
Do you remember what knocked you out of the cut? What was the matchup that you played against?
So it was actually a streamed game. This was the days of seeing Nim with the advanced sensors bomblet drop that couldn't be blocked.
It was
really ridiculous. And of course I was abusing that, but I was flying Boba Fett with Nim specifically because they had matched initiative at initiative 10, and I got bumped out by Dengar Nim, which I had beaten two other times during that tournament. But on stream, I couldn't get it done. I made some really bad decisions late game, but you live and learn.
Wait, so we can actually watch that? Is that on, like, YouTube still?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
if you type
fantastic.
In Gold Squadron Gen Con 2017, you'll find that game.
Or you can message me directly, and I'll be happy to send you the link with much exuberance.
And you've got the you've performed your own MST3K style commentary over it, where you just, you know, tear Paul apart, right?
That's right.
Oh, that might actually be good bonus content for the Patreon page. I'm going to have to think about that. Your more recent accolades, though, these are the ones that really get me excited. You earned an invite to Worlds here, which is pretty exciting.
I did.
You earned it by losing to Nathan Eide, right?
Yes, it was at the Fantasy Flight Center Hyperspace Trial. And I made it all the way to the final. I was the only undefeated player during Swiss play and got to the final table with Nathan, who's an amazing X-Wing player.
Of course,
and decided, you know what? This is the time to change up the opening strategy that I've done the entire day. I was definitely intimidated. He's a very, very good pilot. Did lose to him, but because he already had a World's Invite, it then went to me.
And passed on to you. Well, it's still pretty good getting to the top there. You were also one of the top four Separatist players on your qualifying day at this past Gen Con, right?
Yes, I was also one of the only four players
I believe
Separatist that day.
I believe you were the only one of the only three players who played Separatist that day.
Yes.
So some dial covers went unclaimed.
There were some tough matchups. I was overall pretty happy with the performance. My record shows 3-4, but I actually conceded to my opponent the last round, and we played it out just because I wanted him to get some prizes or have a shot at him, because as you pointed out, I already got them.
Right, so it wasn't a big deal. Well, that was very kind of you. I'm sure he appreciated that.
That is an admonition to collusion on Radio TCX. So everyone watch
now,
out for
no,
Paul.
He didn't. John, he didn't say that they discussed it beforehand. As long as he conceded of his own volition without discussing it beforehand, it's not a problem.
I don't believe it.
Please correct me if I'm wrong.
Nope, that happened. He was playing, and I conceded after... Well, this is going to float my own boat. I was handily beating him, and then I said, I'll concede to you. And his face was of shock and dismay, but is happy to do it. But, Tim, I have one more accolade you didn't talk about.
No, we don't need to talk about it.
No, please. At the Dreamers Hyperspace trial here in Minnesota, I may have made the cut, knocking you out, Tim, by one MOV.
By a single MOV. And that's a particularly bitter moment for that. So I think that might be the most bitter I've been about losing out on a top cut. And that includes the time I lost out to Will Hegwood, where I would have been top cut at this past Worlds. The one MOV in particular, like, I lost the other one by making a mistake. Here, I feel like there was nothing I could have done.
You could have won.
To flip the two MOV swing to take the lead there.
And I couldn't even... I made top four. I couldn't even win it for you. Which made it worse.
And you promised to give me your two straight template from that set, and you never did.
I've still got it. It's framed on my wall. Claim it anytime
awesome.
You want.
Does it have a picture of my face next to it?
Not yet, but we can arrange that.
Awesome. Well, now that we've degraded you and you've degraded me, let's hear your expertise about separatist swarms. One of the reasons we wanted to bring you on board was this is not a list that neither Carson, John, or I have a lot of experience flying recently, though it's been posting some pretty decent results.
Yeah, definitely. I think in the States specifically, for whatever reason, it hasn't caught on. And I don't know if that's because aces are heavier in the US. I'm not sure. But it has been showing really strong results in Europe specifically. There was just a Denmark Nationals that happened where the final two lists were both separatist swarms.
And I think this is pretty interesting. I think there's a certain lack of appeal for people just who don't want to fly swarms list, because I don't know if everyone finds it entertaining or engaging to do, which when you're committing to a long day of X-Wing, that's often a consideration. Is a lot of people say, like, the amount of thought you have to put into it, it's harder to process and work through what a swarm should do versus three or four ships together. To that end, we were talking, Paul, the other day about probably not expecting to see a huge representation in the last chance qualifier at Worlds. But since we're going to have a lot of people coming in from around the globe and including Europe, we can probably see some pretty decent representation on the two qualifying days.
Yeah, I think that's fair. If you're planning on playing in the last chance qualifier, you may not see them, but expect to see them in day 1A and 1B. If you're playing in day 1A, you might run into me specifically flying one. But yeah, my guess is you actually see more in day 1B simply because you're going to get a lot of international travelers flying, and that's one less day they have to travel. But who knows? I don't have a crystal ball. We'll see.
But thankfully, you've committed to exposing all your secrets in this episode. So hopefully anyone who plays against you after listening to this episode should be able to crush you pretty easily.
I can't wait to run into somebody who's listened to this episode and say, oh, now I know how to beat you, and does. I will tip my
hat. And
does.
That's going
to
be perfect. And then you'll feel like how me and Carson feel all the time.
Should we have some special prize just ready for him if that happens? Bounty on me?
There should be a Radio TCX. There should be like a puzzle you put together when you beat, you know, if you beat all three of us at a tournament, you get to like a special reward, all fuses together. The three pieces of the X-Wing Triforce.
I'll put this one out there. Anyone that beats Paul Olsen at Worlds on day 1A, I will buy them a beer. I don't care if that's six different people. I will buy each one of them a beer if they beat Paul.
Let's go.
If you beat him in game 7 and knock him out of the cut, I'll buy you two.
For legal reasons, I have to specify that this only applies to people who are of age and legally allowed to drink. I don't know if John will hold himself to that standards, but for the sake of the podcast, I have to say.
Oh, I will. I will. Don't worry. It's okay.
But let's focus on the separatist swarms here. So there's a lot of reasons these are appealing. There are the lead swarm option. And when we're talking swarms, we're talking, you know, 6+ ships. Sinker swarms also doing very well right now. And we can actually talk about those a little bit later when we're talking about ways to beat separatist swarms. But what you're seeing a lot of these separatist swarms are mostly going to be those vulture class drones, usually low initiative, and there's a lot of different ways you can load them out, but usually you get a list mostly comprised of those and then a couple other ships to get some more options in terms of upgrades.
We'll talk about this a little later, but that's the challenge with flying against a separatist swarm, is that they're all probably going to look just slightly different. Some have grappling struts, some will have energy shell charges, some will have discord missiles, some will just rely on Captain Seer with that crack shot-like ability with a whole bunch of Trade Federation drones. So it's really going to be, okay, can I adapt to the little differences that I'm going to see?
Yeah, and in the way those upgrades combo is crazy, because playing against a swarm with the grappling struts is different than playing against one with grappling struts and energy shell charges, which is different than playing against one that just has energy shell charges. And you move down the line there. And a lot of the stuff, too, is also kind of big picture decided by the tactical relays people are going to bring, which are proven to be incredibly powerful upgrade cards there. And the list will feel different whether someone's using Kraken or if they're using TA-175. Going to be a lot of different ways. So you really have to adapt to whatever the list is. And even if a list is running like the same strategy, you're still going to see slight variations in what ships and what upgrades they're running.
Yeah, the Separatist bomber that just dropped included the tactical relay TA-175. And that's really been gaining popularity, and for good reason. Getting a calculate for every single ship that has a calculate icon on its action bar is incredibly powerful because it's not an action and it gives you something for losing those ships, which, let's be honest, will inevitably happen.
Right, you're going to lose some. They're so cheap and they have so few hit points. The go-to before, I feel like, has been pretty much Kraken all the time. Being able to retain a couple calculate tokens after a turn lets you set up for a really good favorable first engagement. And then follow that up if you don't spend the tokens later. But TA-175, I think, has really been the star of the show here. But Paul, you've been running Kraken mostly, right?
I have. And the reason being is for the initial engagement. I want to have as many tokens as possible. And with my current iteration of my Separatist Swarm, I can have 11 calculate tokens going into that initial joust, which is incredibly powerful for a lot of reasons that we're going to talk about here in a bit.
So with knowing that there's, you know, several different variations of the Separatist Swarm out there, Paul, what are some of the key abilities that kind of stack amidst all of those iterations?
Well, you got to start with networked calculations. Being able to token share is incredibly powerful, but being able to choose when you're spending those is really the key. So if somebody is rolling and you don't roll any eyeballs, okay, I don't have to spend that token. But if you do, okay, I'll choose when to spend it, especially when you're trying to line up those bullseye shots with Seer. You can hang on to those key calculates where you're going to need them on offense. And it compensates for the lack of agility in a big way. So if someone's focus firing on a single ship, well, I don't have to just spend that one token like an ace might. I can hang on to a wide variety of tokens around that ship. So one ship might only have one calculate, but in essence could have five because of all of his friends around him.
And this is something I didn't really account for when looking at Vulture-class drones when they, like, the points first dropped, because they were really inexpensive, and I was looking at them thinking, well, they're 3 hit points, but they only have 2 agility versus, like, a TIE fighter, which has 3 agility, which does make a pretty substantial difference there in terms of survivability. I did not really value network calculations as well as I should, because the fact that you can share those tokens and not only have 2 points of modification, but also have it relevant to whatever ship needs it, like, that is incredibly powerful here. And I think it, in a lot of ways, it does compensate for them having the 2 agility instead of the 3 agility, like a lot of other swarmy ships we see.
It does. I mean, it makes them,
I totally agree.
Them a little tougher to kill. You know, you've got, I think, what'd you say, Paul? You can go into a engagement with 11 calculates. You know, like you said, even if you roll a blank, like, if you've got at least a focus, you've got multiple calculate tokens you can use to modify your agility. So, you know, it could take 2 shots, you know, average, just to kill one drone. Any more than that, and the swarm's getting a huge advantage over the other player.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where I think the value stacks. And this is actually something that has been relevant in the past in X-Wing. Way back in the day in first edition, there was a point where I was running Z95s when everyone was running these, like, overwhelmingly offensive, the triple U-boats list that were just crazy ordnance before they nerfed all the cards. But what I found was the Z95s had 4 hit points and the ships were rolling 4 attack dice. And I said, if I can survive 2 missiles, then I've gotten value. I've paid 12 points to cancel out 2 missiles, which seemed like a good deal. Here, you're kind of seeing that on just like an overall strategy where if it takes 2 shots to kill a drone, oh, that's okay. Like, I didn't want to lose a ship. If it takes 3 or more, like, that's incredible value you've gotten. That ship's absorbed multiple attacks from your opponent.
Well, especially when you have 8 ships, okay, so you spent 2 or 3 shots out of maybe your 3 or 4 ships that are firing, and now 7 shots are coming back at you if you didn't range control well. That's a big deal. Not to mention, it's incredibly hard to kill 8 ships in 75 minutes, especially when
Absolutely.
One of them is a Bulb Lab ship that may have an impervious plating or the actual title, Solus One.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard enough to kill 4 ships right now in X-Wing, so 8 just takes it to a whole nother level. One thing that's interesting, and you brought this to my attention, because I've seen the value of having the linked actions on the Bellble app, because I think actually the Bellble app is a really good value that has been kind of underrated up until this point. We see it in a lot of separatist swarms now, so it's getting its time in the limelight here. But having the linked actions where you can link into calculator focus, depending on which one you're running, super relevant, also very relevant for the vultures, right?
Yeah, linked actions, I would say, are probably the most underrated points to these ships specifically. So you think about a TIE fighter, incredibly efficient, great with Howl Runner at the 3 agility, but doesn't have any linked actions in its bar anywhere. Whereas these droids do. So that means they can reposition, take that calculate token right afterwards, and then easily clear it because they have an amazing dial. Their banks aren't that great, but when they can go two straight and then barrel roll, they almost do this sliding motion. And same thing with the two hard barrel roll, they almost pivot in place. And that's incredibly powerful when trying to dogfight and still be very action efficient.
Well, and you mentioned earlier that the Bellble Lab you're running with them is Captain Seer. Mm-hmm. That's an Initiative 2 Bellble Lab who has the ability, while a friendly ship at range 0 to 3 performs a primary attack, if the defender is in its bullseye before the neutralized result steps, the friendly ship may spend one calculate token to cancel one evade. So this just really compounds the value of having those linked actions there, where you can actually line up those bullseyes or set up multiple bullseyes in a row so you can hopefully get at least one of them to trigger and kind of get this crack shot-like effect.
Yeah, especially if you know where somebody's going to be. And that's something that makes this incredibly hard to go after too, is just the sheer amount of ships. You have such incredible board control. So it's not just one ship blocking one ship, but saying, okay, I'm going to put this ship as the guy I want to block, but then the rest of the swarm is behind him. So you can't even try to hop over him because you're going to run into his friends and you'll be stopped with the front one. That lets you set up those bullseyes to make sure that seer ability is going off, spending those calculates where you're needed so that you're getting that extra damage in. And that's what's really scary about this type of list. And specifically, and some spoilers, I'll be carrying the Vulture Droid DFS-311, which allows you to pass a calculate token to a friend at range 0 to 3. He can give that to a friendly that already has the bullseye lined up at the start of the engagement phase. Incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and with all those repositioning options and just like the sheer number of ships there, one thing I discovered when we were practicing the other day, I was running kind of a modified high ground list, and I made one positioning mistake, and you capitalized on it, and the game was pretty much lost for me in that one turn, I'd say.
Yeah, and that's all it takes when going into a game. At initiative one, these ships are going to be able to move before most others. So you're not going to have to worry about bumps. And when it's an experienced player, they're still going to get all that action efficiency and be able to pounce on that one mistake. That means the ceiling is incredibly high when it comes to flying well against these guys. But you really have to make sure you're engaging at the exact right time, or yep, that experienced player is going to make you pay.
One of the other really nice things with the Separatist Swarm, particularly, is you just have a lot of arcs and a lot of dice you're going to be chucking at your opponent.
Yeah, I mean, low end, right? If you have, you know, what do you have in your list? Seven vultures, six vultures?
Seven vultures and one Bellble Lab. It's Captain Seer specifically, six Trade Federation drones, one DFS-311 who can pass the calculate, and then, and this is the little twist that I'm throwing in for Worlds, DFS-081, who allows a friendly at 0 to 1 to spend a calculate token to change all crit results to hits when defending. I found that those direct hits, those sneaky crits that get through, can make or break a game. And so being able to mitigate that in some capacity will just give that advantage that I think this list has been missing, at least when I've been flying it. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the harder you make it for people to kill those ships in one shot, I mean, there's a decent chance if someone hits a hit crit through on you, that could come up as a double damage and then just take it out in that one turn. Not a good value. If you lose them in one shot, that's not a good exchange for you. But, you know, with the ships you have right there, that is, if my math is right, 17 red dice if they all get to shoot. Even if you lose one of them, 15, you lose two of them, still 13 attack dice. So you've got a lot of guns there, even if someone has a decent first engagement and they initiative kill two of them.
Yeah, they're all getting mods, and they probably have at least a few that are getting that crack shot-like ability with Seer. Imagine unlimited crack shots. That's basically what a Seer list can do, and that's what's incredibly scary.
Right, because they can pull the actual attack modification from a different ship and keep their own calculate token to, if they're in the bullseye, cancel an evade result.
Correct.
One thing you've talked to me about before, too, is that you really appreciate the options they give you in terms of board control and blocking, which blocking has kind of lost a little bit of value recently because there's so many abilities that don't depend on people fully executing a maneuver. There are enough that do, but still, even just blocking actions is huge. And with 8 ships on the board, you have some pretty decent blocking options, right?
Yeah, it's not just one ship. Really, you have to think of the swarm as almost like a giant ship that's saying, all right, this is somewhere you cannot fly unless you want to fly over the top of them, which can be difficult. And if you make the wrong call, even one turn, it probably means curtains for that ship. So yeah, blocking is something that I've really started practicing with the swarm and have come to enjoy. It's made me really up my game in a big way. And John and I fly against each other a lot. He flies aces a lot. And that's upped my game in a big way too. Hands down, John is a better pilot than I am. But he's made me better because I've been able to practice against that and set up those blocks and those board control states.
That's a pretty generous statement, saying that you always beat me in practice.
Not when it counts though.
As long as you're winning the tournament games, that's what matters. And that's something, I mean, the aces really do fear. I mean, right now, not a great time to be an ace in X-Wing. People are still terrified of Nantex and Sunvac, even though, you know, we've taken a position where it's not that big of a deal. But also having just a swarm in there, that's really hard for an ace to deal with, because just one of those ships moves in right, blocks all the actions from an ace, and then, you know, 7 ships follow up to shoot at it. That ace is going to take a lot of damage or die, almost guaranteed.
Yeah, and I think from a metacall perspective, we may see some Sunvac or Sunvac, however you want to say it, at Worlds. But the Swarm, I would argue, is not super scared of seeing him because, okay, he may tractor one of my ships and that guy is probably going to die. But that means the rest of my Swarm is going to be able to shoot at him. And, well, he doesn't have the unlimited mods that a true Swarm does. And he can go down really fast. And he's a really important piece to a list that's flying him.
So one of the exclusive upgrade types that the Separatists have is the tactical relay upgrade, which they all have the solitary word so that you can only have one tactical relay in your entire squad, not just per ship. And the go-to for Separatist swarms for a long time has been Kraken. That's that 10-point, gives you the calculate action. During the end phase, you may choose up to 3 friendly ships at range 0-3. If you do, each of these ships does not remove one calculate token. So basically, they give you an option to hold on to calculates. More recently, though, we're seeing a rise in the use of TA-175, who, after a friendly ship at range 0-3 with calculate on its action bar is destroyed, each friendly ship at range 0-3 with calculate on its action bar gains one calculate token. So right now, you're still running Kraken, right? But We're seeing a lot of players use TA-175. Paul, can you tell us a little bit about why people would choose one over the other?
Yeah, I know that there's a lot of debate behind it. I think the biggest reason is that TA-175 is 5 points cheaper, so you can put a lot more in your swarm than what you did with Kraken with similar results. In testing, I found that initial engagement was where I could win or lose a game, and I didn't like having to lose a ship to gain all those calculates. And if an enemy is shooting all at the same initiative, that TA-175 ability doesn't trigger, at least how it's ruled currently, so that a ship has to be removed from the board before it can actually gain those calculate tokens for all of its friendlies.
Oh, interesting. Right. It's not considered destroyed until it's removed.
Right. Again, if that ruling changes, hex yes, I'll take TA-175. But against a list that maybe has 4 initiative 3 ships, they might be able to take out 2 or even 3 drones before I'm even getting that calculate ability to trigger.
And at that point, if they gain them after multiple ships have shot, they're not going to be able to use them defensively. So they're kind of a moot point,
yep.
Right?
The other relay that I've seen, at least making the rounds on some different tournaments, is K2B4, which is while a friendly ship at range 0-3 defends, it can spend a calculate token. If it does, add an evade result unless the attacker chooses to gain a strain token. And what's powerful about this is it can stack with a tractor beam token, so an enemy ship could have an agility reduced by 2 when being shot at. Yes, only that first shot by that initial first attack, but that means that you can really take some serious damage. And whenever you're able to add an evade result, that's a really powerful ability as well. I think, again, TA-175 is probably going to be more popular, but that's another thing you might see.
So, Paul, with some of that kind of inside knowledge into the Separatist Swarm and how they work and some things you might see, what are some strategies you would consider giving to people to try and prepare to beat a Separatist Swarm?
And we need you to be honest with this. You can't just give bad advice so that you can beat people at Worlds, because we're going to be held accountable to that. I'm going to be held accountable to that. So you need to make sure you're totally honest about what strategies people should employ to beat you.
That's right.
So basically, how do I get you beer from John? That's okay.
Exactly.
I'm happy to share all the secrets. No, I really do want to provide some insight, because I think this is probably an archetype that a lot of players, at least in Minnesota, haven't prepared against a ton. So I'm happy to share all I know. And if that means I go down, so be it. But yeah, I've got a few that I'm happy to talk about. I think the first one is just know that each swarm will be tweaked slightly different. I doubt there'll be another list exactly like mine at Worlds, maybe, but everyone seems to flavor them just a tad different. And that means you'll have to fly against them slightly differently as well, because they're trying to do different things.
So, okay, so let's look at some of those iterations and what would be the strategy to employ? So what, like, pick an iteration that we can talk about.
So let's start with the type of list that I'm flying, which is a true Seer Swarm. It's seven ships, pretty much stripped down, with Seer being able to use his ability. Against that type of ship, engagement is everything. You want to make sure when you're first engaging with the list that you're shooting at two, maybe three of my ships, and I'm not able to fire all of my list at yours back. That will be key to taking down a few drones, at least one, before you're actually getting into the scrum. From there, make sure you're taking out that Seer ship. He is the most points in the list specifically, and is also the one that's triggering all those abilities. Now, it's going to be a swarm between him and you, but if you can get one ship that's even flanking and starting to pump in some early damage, even if it means you're not killing drones, as soon as he goes down, the list pretty much falls apart.
Right, because you can just pick him apart there. You just need to get rid of at least some of the meat of the list so that you can actually make meaningful kills. Because once you take two ships down, then every ship individually becomes more and more significant to you. And then once you get down to, like, if I have three ships and you only have four left, I'm probably going to be okay, because yours are pretty cheap.
So let's talk about another list type, which is energy shell charges. You're going to see all these Trade Federation drones with that energy shell charge. They're actually wanting to engage at range three, unlike my list. So in that circumstance, you're wanting to close the distance pretty rapidly and making sure that, again, you're not getting shot at multiple times by those energy shell charges.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the strategy there, too, is that you have to acknowledge that they are investing a lot of points to get the shell charges on there. So that means their list is going to be thinned out in some other regard.
Correct.
So if you can create a scenario where they're not getting good value out of energy shell charges, that's the scenario you want to pursue. It's also, they can reload them, but that's pretty difficult and time consuming to do. And I don't think it's going to be viable if you're putting a lot of pressure on them real quick. So I think pressure is huge there, where you have to make them make difficult decisions, as well as avoid getting shot at by, you know, seven energy shell charges.
The last one I'll talk about is a swarm that has a Hyena class droid bomber in it. The reason that you'll include that, along with a lot of other Separatist drones, is to make sure that you can carry that payload, as it's called now, of probe droids. That is meant to be something to allow your entire swarm to gain a calculate and target lock when it coming into an engagement. In that scenario, you're knowing that the swarm is going to hold off until it comes in fully modded. So if you can close the distance between those locks really able to happen, even better.
Right. That's one where you really want to engage quickly, so they're not going to get the setup there. I also think that's a reason probably I think a lot of people are going to avoid going with the probe droids, just because that is, your strategy is really dependent on getting good setup. Whereas with your list, Paul, or even with just a grappling struts list, you can be a little bit more adaptable to the scenario and just react to whatever's going on, because you're not including in your plan having to take a turn or two to just get target locks.
Yeah, I didn't talk about grappling struts as an archetype, because a lot of times it'll just be flavored in. What's interesting about that one is that they're not just shutting down lanes, they're actually able to go on top of those rocks around those lanes and saying, all right, I'm either going to hunker down and wait to come for you to come to me, or saying, all right, I'm going to come off of this rock and barrel and calculate. I feel like a lot of players use the grappling struts initially just because players weren't ready for the type of interactions that they were going to see. For example, you could do that swivel and then barrel roll off of a rock. When I first started doing that to a couple of players, they were shocked that that was an ability that you could use. But right. I think for Worlds, people are going to be ready for it, which is one reason why I'm like, struts, I'm just not going to bother with.
Now, so I've encountered some struts in the past too, and they're a little tricky to play around because they really do function differently than any kind of mechanic we've seen before, like pertaining to movement. So they're a little bit harder to predict, especially when you can do that nonsense like rotating and barrel rolling off them. My question would be for you, since they only work on debris clouds and asteroids, do you think it should be a serious consideration for people who aren't going to bring gas clouds to bring gas clouds just so they're giving less opportunities for grappling struts, vultures to take advantage of?
Oh, that's a loaded question. My short answer is yes, because the gas clouds are really your ability to hide from multiple shots. We've heard gas clouds compared to the 1.0 auto thrusters, and it's really true. If you're able to hide behind a gas cloud with an ace and having seven ships shoot at you with high agility, it's unlikely they're going to be able to push any damage through.
Right, so you're saying it's more less about the grappling struts and more about it's just got a general application against swarms where you're getting the multiple shots. That's just one spot you can use to get those blanks to evade. And then if you're only throwing two dice out there, like in your build, it's pretty easy to avoid if you're rolling four
Correct.
Dice, right? With the
Yep, and I should mention, yeah. too, grappling struts is a big deal, too, because as you're locked onto that rock with the grappling strut, you're getting the obstruction bonus on defense as the droid, but you're not having to shoot through it when attacking, and that is very powerful, definitely. So, yeah, gas clouds are a good counter to that, too.
I hate grappling struts so much.
I think we've been pretty public about our loathing for that card just from, like, the word vomit that it is, and nobody has still convinced me that it doesn't technically work. Like, I read that card text, and I feel like it flips over automatically twice in a turn. I can explain that in person. I don't want to get into it again on the show, but the other question I was going to have for you too, now that we do have the Nantex out and Sunfac is a relevant pilot, do you expect to see any builds where we're running multiple of maybe the Vultures with a Sunfac as an ace, kind of a mid-range deal?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. I don't know how much Sunfac you're going to see at Worlds. I'll say this though, that with a mini swarm and Sunfac, that sounds like a really powerful combination. That being said, you lose a lot of the hard hitting of the swarm itself when you're having less ships from a board control state. Yes, Sunfac's incredibly good. Aces will have to be wary of him. But I know one of the reasons I didn't take it was because I wanted the hard hitting consistency of this swarm because Sunfac can die fairly easily.
Right.
And maybe I'm just not as good a pilot. Who knows? There may be somebody who just shines and ruins everybody's day.
Well, part of me wonders, because, you know, to fully load out Sunfac, you're looking in, what, the 70 to 80 point range for a fully loaded Sunfac. And we talked about him previously. But I think part of the problem with that when lined up with these, like, cheap Vultures is that you're kind of losing a little bit of value on the swarm when you don't get up to that, like, six ship threshold. Because I feel like there's something to be said about if you're only running, say, like four Vultures, the value's okay, but they can get picked apart pretty quickly. Once you hit like the 6, 7, 8 threshold, I feel like you get more than a linear value, if that makes any sense, right? Like once you hit 6, like the value starts to increase every step you go beyond that.
Especially when you have a tactical relay of some kind. It's incredibly hard to fit a tactical relay carrier, drones and Sunfac all in the same list. And so that would be definitely a problem. I don't know. Maybe somebody can, but I haven't found it.
Well, and I've mentioned this a couple times in previous episodes too, but I for some reason feel the need to keep bringing it up. And Paul, you and I have actually talked about this and I think you agreed with me, but I mean, if you're going to sink the points into something to fly alongside the swarm, we've seen a lot of success with that Count Dooku ship. It's a good value for the points. It's harder to kill. And it still gets kind of that tractor effect that Sunfac is going for, getting to shoot at initiative 7 with heightened perception and the tractor beam. Just seems like a better investment for the points than, you know, a 4-hit point, 78-point ship.
So, Paul, here's a big question. You keep an eye on the metagame. You're looking across the world. So you have a pretty good idea of what to expect at Worlds. What would you say are the list archetypes that you're most afraid of to get paired up against?
pretty much everything I saw at Gen Con. it was there were two games specifically that I just matched up against these types of lists, and I knew it was going to be a real tough fight. There are actually three, and I beat it one of them, but the other two times I didn't. So going through them, the Sinker Swarm, man, at I2 that can get so many shots at all of my I1 guys that can die fairly quickly. And so range control is a big deal, but that's just tough. And actually, there was a consideration from my standpoint to actually fly a 6 I3 kind of mini swarm with Seer and an I1 just to deal with that list specifically because I was afraid of it. I feel like the Sinker Swarm in general, I don't know if people are going to fly it as much at Worlds, but that's one thing that is just kind of a meta call. I'm like, yeah, we'll just stick with the stuff that I've been practicing enough. But yeah, that can be a tough matchup for swarms for sure.
At a certain point, you just have to make a gamble, right? Like, I don't expect to see this because I might, but I might not, right? You have to pick a side.
Yep. Rebel and Resistance Beef is another one. So 4 T-70s, 4 B-wings, 4 U-wings. That's a lot of health to chew through. And again, they're firing at just that high enough initiative level that I'm probably losing 2 to 3 ships on the initial engagement if I don't engage correctly. And so in some stances, I am the one that the pressure is on to fly well and make that engagement happen in a better capacity than my opponent would be.
Well, right, because like even with the T-70s at 7 hit points and 2 agility, you could shoot at them a lot. Like you could just line it up where all ships are shooting in that round. And, you know, if they skew a little bit towards the T-70s, you might not kill a T-70 in 7 or 8 shots, right?
And then they're getting to shoot again, and I'm probably losing another 2 to 3 ships. And at that point, the game's over. The last archetype would be bombs. Droids don't like to see auto crits. They don't like rocks getting blown up. They don't like all the splash damage that's happening. I'll say that bombs haven't been a real big staple in the meta, at least that I've seen. But I will say when you come up against them, oh boy, I have to fly very differently so that I'm not losing half of my swarm just to a bomb blowing up in my face.
Well, and it's kind of interesting, too, because proton bombs are actually at a pretty decent price point where they could be competitive. I just don't think there is a great reason to take them right now. But I would definitely expect if we do see, you know, overwhelming success from separatist swarms and even some of just the efficiency lists that we're seeing, I could see that really jumping back into the metagame right post-Worlds, you know, especially if we don't see any huge recosting for, you know, vulture droids or anything super cheap.
I'll say this. If you're planning on flying a decimator to Worlds, probably hard consider bringing a proton bomb.
All right, so Paul, if I was a listener to this podcast and I did not want to listen to all the wonderful details you just gave me, can you give me the too long didn't read version of what we should do against separatist swarms?
Yep, in no particular order, but all very important. They are: make the swarm choose a direction and then flank with one of your other ships. From there, you're making the swarm commit to a side so that you can pump it some damage before they're actually giving anything back. In a lot of ways, it's a damage race. 2, kill the tactical relay carrier early if possible. It's really hard to do, but if you're able to do it, you're going to have a leg up. 3, kill the special droids. For example, DFS 311. It's a really powerful ability, and they're probably going to be behind others, but if you can kill them early, a big leg up. 4, don't be afraid to run and re-engage. Fly away, come back around, pick your engagement correctly. It only takes one round of bad engagement to lose a game against a swarm. And finally, 5, know your win condition. Yes, this is general, but going into the game, you should know how many droids do I have to kill to actually win this game.
And this is a huge one overall. This is really important here, though. You do want to, at least at the start of the game, it's totally all right to ask your opponent what the point thresholds are for their ships and the half point thresholds, because that is relevant information that you do want to have for the game, so you don't have to ask them to give away what you're going to do, first of all. And second of all, that you can just make calculations like, all right, if I lose this T-70, but I kill these 3 ships, we're about to hit time, I think I can do that, and I'll win on points. That might make all the difference when you go to, you know, 75-minute rounds, because you might not be able to kill them all. You have to actually make those determinations of how many points do I have to kill in the given amount of time I have. Awesome, Paul. That was fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I hope so.
Yeah. Sorry I made fun of you at the start, but I guess you got to pick some fun at me too, right?
I hang out with John enough. I'm used to it.
Yeah, I'm not sorry.
That's one thing people don't get from John on the podcast thus far is that locally he is just savage and he will just destroy you, both in terms of winning X-Wing games and also just your emotional state.
Well, thanks again, Tim and John, for having me on. It was truly an honor. Had a lot of fun. And best of luck to everybody at Worlds, just not against me.
Thank you, Paul. And if we get some positive reaction, maybe we'll ask you back. And if we don't get positive reaction, this will probably be the last time I ever speak to you.
That sounds about right. One MOV, right, Tim?
One MOV. I want that too straight.
Thanks for coming on, Paul. It was a good episode. I enjoy hanging out and talking to you about X-Wing. So thanks again. I'd like to give just a quick shout out to my boss, Greg Ball, and my work partner, Susanna Stelberg-Rudisil. Both of them in the last week found out that I am on an X-Wing podcast and said that they were going to listen at some point. So I'm going to both give them a shout out and call them out. Guys, if you're listening to this, thank you for doing that. I know neither of you know much about X-Wing at all. But now you've listened, and you don't ever have to again if you don't want to.
And I would like them to know that I told John we needed to put this towards the end of the show so that they'd be forced to listen to an entire podcast about something they probably don't care that much about. That just sounded really funny to me. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go on to facebook.com/RadioTCX and like our Facebook page. We're getting up higher and higher in likes. I'm not sure if we're at 1,000. I actually haven't checked recently. But if we're not, please like us so we can get to 1,000. And if we are, let's start heading towards 2,000. That would be awesome. You can also follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. We occasionally post some stuff up there. I'd expect more content, especially around Worlds, when we'll want to get a lot of smaller information out over that whole week.
If you really like listening to the show, you can consider going on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review saying what you liked and why you think other people should listen.
And if you really enjoy listening to the show, you could support us directly through Patreon. We appreciate everyone who's been a Patreon. We've had some members who have been there for a long time. I promise you we're working on new rewards, actually going to be a couple of them for those of you who have supported us over the long time. We're just finishing up a logo redesign here, so hopefully we can get things going soon after Worlds. I don't want to commit to a timetable I can't keep, but there will be rewards for those of you who stick around, and incentives for people to join us back up on Patreon. Again, everyone, a huge thank you to Paul for coming on the show, and a thank you to all you listeners out there. We really appreciate you supporting us every week, even if you're just listening. That really means a lot to us, and we hope to see a lot of you at Worlds. If not, we will talk to you next week.